When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
This episode brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
Hello, folks, and welcome to Police Off the Cuff. We're sort of going live. The judge in the Michelle Traconis case is sentencing her right now. I'm just going to go right to his live feed.
The court cannot develop the passions that one side or the other has. In State versus Huey, that's 199 Connecticut, 121 at 126, a 1986 case, the Connecticut Supreme Court held that the sentencing court may consider information that would be inadmissible at trial for the purpose of sentencing. That same court held that evidence of crimes for which the defendant was indicted but neither tried nor convicted may be considered. Well, the word indicted and the process of indictment is not generally employed in Connecticut. Essentially, that means where there has been a finding of probable cause, but there has been no trial or no conviction. Additionally, as a matter of due process, the court may consider information that has a minimum indicia of reliability. Now, that minimum indicia of reliability is not limited to unfavorable information. The court can consider favorable information that has a minimum indicia of reliability. The court certainly considers the victim impact statements. Every victim has the right to be heard before the court sentences a defendant. That's part of the Connecticut Victims Bill of Rights, which is read every day in every courthouse here in Connecticut. The court would clarify what it perceives as perhaps a misconception of what the court's role is. The court does not deliberate with the jury. The court does not deliberate on the evidence at all. The court hears the evidence as the evidence comes into the record. So when you hear that the court has a view of the evidence, the court has no view of the evidence. What the court has is a verdict and what could have been the reasonable and logical inferences from the evidence that was adduced. The court would not know what the jury discussed over those many hours.
The sentencing of Michelle Traconis. This is the judge. Very thoughtful judge. Learned. Really knows
what the court can find is this. It was clear during the jury charge, jury instructions, that the court instructed the jury that it may draw any reasonable and logical inferences from the facts found to have been proven. Based on the verdict, the jury could have found the following reasonable and logical inferences. Fotis Doulos was not home at 4 Jefferson Crossing the morning of May 24th when his wife was murdered. But the defendant said he was home. When the defendant admitted that he was not home, the defendant, who had been angry about Doulos' talking to other women, did not even ask him where he had been. The defendant, who was angry that he had visited his wife, did not ask him if he had visited her. In fact, the defendant, as the court remembers, the evidence didn't ask him anything. The jury could draw a reasonable and logical inference that the defendant knew where he was and knew what he was doing. The defendant said she saw Kent Mawhinney and Fotis Doulos together in the office at 4 Jefferson Crossing on the morning of May 24, but the defendant did not see Fotis Doulos and Kent Mawhinney in the office at 4 Jefferson Crossing on the morning of May 24. There was a phone call made to Doulos' phone, which Doulos left intentionally at 4 Jefferson Crossing. The defendant answered it, and the jury could draw a reasonable and logical inference from all of the evidence that the defendant answered the phone to make it appear that Doulos took the call himself on the morning of May 24th at 4 Jefferson Crossing, when he was really on his way to or in New Canaan. When a police officer came to 4 Jefferson Crossing soon after the murder, the defendant did not even go to the door, even though her daughter, who was not home, may have been the subject of that conversation at the door. Now, it has been clear that the defendant cares deeply for her daughter. The jury could draw a reasonable and logical inference that the defendant did not go to the door because the defendant knew the reason the officer was there, to find out more about the disappearance of Jennifer Doulos. These are reasonable and logical inferences from the facts that were adduced in the case during the trial. The defendant traveled through a part of Hartford with Doulos as he dumps the bloody clothing of his wife. The jury could draw a reasonable and logical inference that on the same day, the defendant helped him pretend he was home in the morning, but in the evening accompanied him to get rid of the evidence. The defendant's DNA profile was found on one of the bags disposed of in Hartford. The jury could draw a reasonable and logical inference that the defendant helped dispose of the evidence knowingly. The jury could draw a reasonable and logical inference that the defendant helped Fotis Doulos clean up traces of evidence at 80 Mountain Spring Road because the defendant and Doulos were there together cleaning. On the same day that Tacoma traveled to New Canaan. This is a flurry of irregular activity all on the same day. The jury could draw a reasonable and logical inference that the activities of that day were so irregular that the defendant could not possibly forget them in the span of 2 weeks. Even if the jurors individually had doubts about the defendant's guilt, each one of them ultimately concluded that their doubts were not reasonable. This is not a view of the court's view of the evidence. These are logical and reasonable inferences that the jury could have drawn. The court is going to talk a little about the philosophy of sentencing. Sentencing is not a product of the court's passions or prejudices. The court doesn't have a bond with anyone involved in the case. It's a dispassionate exercise. The court did not investigate the case. The court did not talk to the victims. The court has no conversation with the defendant or the defendant's family. So there are some questions that are age old. Does the court, the sentencing court, adopt the public opprobrium, the indignation of the community? When does retribution turn into revenge? What's the role of empathy? Should the court exercise sympathy for one side or another? These are age-old questions. The court relies on what the law says. The court can consider the nature and circumstances of the offense, the history, background, and character of the offender. Every exercise is not an either-or exercise. Often, the good and the bad are true. What is the purpose of the court taking into consideration the victim impact statements? Is that only for the purpose of sympathy? The court uses the victim impact statements to assign, in its view, the proper weight to any one of those traditional purposes of sentencing. Sentencing is not arbitrary or capricious. It's not a matter of how the judge feels that day. The court wants to also address what has become, over the course of perhaps centuries, perhaps not, a cliche. Michelle Traconis's life is in your hands. Michelle Traconis' life is in her own hands. What Michelle Traconis decides to do today, tomorrow, and the next day is up to her. From what the court has heard, she has a great deal to offer. The court has no control over what her decisions will be. Her life is hers. The following sentences are going to run concurrently. On the count charging conspiracy to commit murder, 20 years execution suspended after 14 and a half years to serve, 5 years probation. Tampering with physical evidence, 5 years execution suspended after 4 years, 5 years probation. Conspiracy to tamper with physical evidence, 5 years execution suspended after 4 years, 5 years probation. The second count of tampering with physical evidence, 5 years execution suspended after 4 years, 5 years probation. Hindering prosecution, 5 years execution suspended after 4 years probation. After 4 years, rather, 5 years probation. Total effective sentence, 20 years execution suspended after 14 and one half years, 5 years probation. You will have an opportunity to challenge every finding that the jury made and every ruling that the court made. Madam Clerk, you can give the defendant her notice of right to appeal.
Judge, I'm going to orally state that Ms. Traconis does intend to appeal and ask the court to set a reasonable appeal bond. I will state that the appeal bond that the court set was not something that Ms. Traconis or her family were able to meet. I'm asking for something more in line with what she had been released on bond for the last 5 years. I would note that after Your Honor went on vacation, the state asked for additional conditions, which included making her move to Connecticut and remain within the bounds of Connecticut. My position, Your Honor, is the court obviously took that into consideration when it set that high bond that she was not a resident of Connecticut, because that's what the state had then argued. I'm asking that if she's going to be released, that the court set a $2 million bond, but with a condition that she reside in Connecticut and not leave without permission.
And well, the court is going to decline to set an appeal bond. It's not a constitutional right. As the defendant signed the notice of right to appeal, we'll stand adjourned.
All rise.
Wow. That's all I could say is wow. Okay. What do you think of that, Mike?
Honestly, I got to say that I think the judge was rather lenient, considering, you know, the charges. So I'm surprised, but altogether, it looks like she's going to do about 14 and a half years, and then she'll be, because all of the charges will be served, the findings will be served concurrently. So all of the charges, concurrent sentencing starting on the day one, and will go all the way after 5 years. A whole bunch of charges will drop, disappear. And then after 20 years, after 14 and a half years, the final charge will be done and she'll be on parole after that. For covering up a homicide of a mother of five children with her boyfriend, tampering with physical evidence and things like that, I'm surprised. I would have expected 25 to life. But that's the judge. That's Connecticut. That's okay. You know, that's the way
you know,
to do
Mike,
it.
One of the things that, and I'm going to play a little bit of it, she had some friends come in, give basically impact statements on her right. behalf. But before I get to that, I want to talk about this attorney she has is a very good attorney. I don't know if you ever watched him work, but he's an excellent attorney. And he was the very last thing he was at.
This episode brought to you by Progressive. Whether you're driving, cooking, or doing laundry, Progressive knows the podcasts you listen to go best when they're bundled with another activity. Much like how their Progressive home and auto policies go best when they're bundled. Having these two policies together makes taking care of your insurance easier and could help you save, too. Customers who save by switching their home and car insurance to Progressive save over $775 on average. That's a whole lot of savings and protection for your favorite podcast listening activities, like going on a road trip, cooking dinner, and even hitting the home gym. Yep, your home and your car are even easier to protect when you bundle your insurance together. Find your perfect combo. Get a home and car insurance quote at Progressive.com today. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $779 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Not available in all states.
Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify helps you sell everywhere, from their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system. Shopify's got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. What I love about Shopify is how no matter how big you want to grow, Shopify gives you everything you need to take control and take your business to the next level. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. and Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/westwoodone, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/westwoodone now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/westwoodone.
Asking for was an appeal bond,
right?
In essence, to let her out while the case was being appealed, and the judge just said no.
See,
that's not a constitutional right. And my position is no, she's not getting an appeal bond. And you saw the attorney, so I think he thought that that was a possibility, but the judge nixed that immediately.
That was good, because you got to remember now, she wasn't originally a resident of Connecticut. She's in Connecticut as part of, you know, of her status right now during the trial, but she stands now convicted, and she stands now sentenced. If you let her out on bond, appeal bond, she could actually, if she wanted to, she could try to flee, you know, that sort of thing. And even if she doesn't, she wouldn't serve time in prison until sometime after the case was finished. So if the attorney appealed to the intermediate appellate court, if I ever got a hearing before the Connecticut Supreme Court, you know, you're talking several years down the line before a sentence would even begin being served. And the idea that she's a flight risk, I think, is very important. And I'm glad the judge took care of that. Without any sort of just basically backhanded, the attorney said, look, that's it. She's not entitled to it. You know, she's different now than she was the day before she was sentenced. She's now a convicted criminal who took part in covering up the most violent crime we have, the killing of another human being. So therefore, she is a risk. She's a risk. So while she's out, and I'm glad she will start serving her time, and she will start serving it immediately. And that's the best thing here. If she ever wins an appeal, fine. She'll be like other people. Not too many people win on appeal, but I'm glad the judge did not entertain that notion of an appeal bond.
Absolutely. K-Pick from the chat. Appeal bonds are rare, but if they do give one, it's normally the appellate judge that does give it out. And when you're on appeal bond, that time counts as your time in jail. Is that true? When you're out on bond, that counts as being incarcerated? I don't think that's true.
I didn't know that. I don't know if that's like that in New York. I've not heard that, so I'm not sure.
Yeah. I was sort of happy that, you know, he shut down that appeal thing. Mm-hmm. I want to play a little bit of the perpetrator, we should call them, impact statements by her friends.
My friend Jenny. At 20, on my roof in Brooklyn, the summer we lived together. Jenny Farber was my friend for 46 years, from when we were 4 to when we were 50, from community nursery school to middle school math class to Brown University. You have to be pretty extraordinary to inspire friendship that evergreen. She was. All the adjectives. Deep, beautiful, genius, outrageous, gentle, and wise. Can't even come close. We live together.
Of course, I'm sorry. Jennifer Farber is Jennifer Doulos. That is the victim in this case. Yes. So this is a victim impact statement to the judge. And obviously, they're appealing to the judge to give the harshest sentence possible.
Traveled together, and we held each other's babies when they were born. And I am lonely for Jennifer every day. My conversation with her lasted for 46 years. It ended on May 24th, 2019, forever silenced. I have her last voicemail. I have her last text saved on my phone. I have no other friend who knew me at 4 and at 12 and at 20 and at 50. The Jennifer that knew me at all those ages is gone. And all those Jennies stretching back in time exist only in my memory. I can't see them in her face. Sometimes I can glimpse them in her children's expressions, hear their laugh in theirs. On March 1st, 2024, Michelle Traconis was convicted of conspiring to murder Jennifer Farber Doulos. By killing Jennifer, Traconis cut off a future for Jennifer and for us. So much of this trial has been about what was, a failed relationship, divorce, court orders. But every time that I was with Jennifer and her children, she was deeply, truly content. She was always holding one kid's hand, had another in her lap, was making a crazy joke with two of them. She delighted in them wholly. The most relaxed, beautiful, and fulfilled I have seen her in all my years of friendship with her was with them. That should have continued, growing and changing and evolving. But because of Michelle Traconis, Jennifer's kids never got that future with her. The week before she was killed, Jenny called me. She was feeling hopeful about the future, that there was light at the end of the divorce tunnel. I said, we're gonna have so much fun. You're gonna find someone to love who loves you. You're gonna be free. But because Michelle Traconis, Jennifer never got that future, and I never got that time with her. By killing Jennifer, Michelle Traconis shattered Jennifer's family. I have spent every day for the past 5 years, numb with grief and raging with anger, working with these extraordinary people to piece this family together. We are a patched, wobbling, defiant, and loving thing. At the same time, I have struggled to protect my family from the fallout and the grief, my neglect, and my anger. I've asked everything of my husband, my children, and my aging parents, and I will keep asking it of them because our project is never gonna end. By killing Jennifer, Traconis left 5 children without a mother. I witness that loss every day. I take solace in Jennifer's children, Christiane and Constantine, Petros and Noel and Theodore, because they are part of her and they are now a part of me, like she was a part of me. But every act of mothering them, hair brushed, hands held, secrets kept, fights, worry, and pride is bittersweet. All joy is mediated because every moment that's good and every moment that's bad, Jennifer desperately wanted. It should be her. Visiting colleges with Theodore. Lazing in bed with Christiane. Cheering at Noelle's volleyball game. It should be her wrestling with Petros' ACTs and laughing at Constantine's newspaper article. Not me. But Jenny's not here. Because Traconis helped destroy evidence and lied to the police, Fotis Doulos remained at large over 9 months following the murder of Jennifer, from May 2019 to January 2020. That's May, all of June, July, August, September, October, November, December, January. We lived in a state of fear that we would lose the kids to him and that they would be hurt. Hours after the murder, Doulos demanded we return the kids to him. 2 days after the murder, he was raging in our lobby. Even after he was arrested, the police warned us that he would kidnap the kids or enact some violent revenge on us for taking care of them. I did the calculations. How long did we have from when the ankle bracelet alarm went off until he arrived on our doorstep? 1 hour? Maybe? The kids were accompanied everywhere by armed security guard for 9 months, and I was never not on alert. Because Traconis helped destroy evidence and lied to the police, Jennifer's body has never been found. I could not mourn Jennifer openly because she was missing. I could not answer the kids' questions. Where is she? I gave a eulogy at a memorial without a body. Her mother put a headstone over an empty grave. Because Traconis assisted Doulos in the disposal of Jennifer's body, all we do have is a bloody bra and a shirt stiff with Jennifer's blood, sliced up the center. And all of the horror engendered by these, our only artifacts, that's what the kids have left of their beautiful, gentle mother. And that's what I have left of my friend. In the instructions explaining the scope of the victim's statements, we are invited to give our opinion as to what should happen to the defendant. In my opinion, Michelle Traconis deserves the maximum sentence available under the law. One, your cruelty is stunning, and therefore you deserve a sentence at the upper range of the limit, upper limit of the range. These five children were not an abstraction. They were not your boyfriend's kids, a photograph on a desk. You skied with them, you lived with them, you fed them, you tucked them in. Your child, Nicole, is the same age as Petrus and Theodore. She is a daughter like Christiane and Noelle. How could you, as a mother, knowing what that means, knowing what that bond is, how important that is for Nicole, choose to kill the mother of these children you claim to love? You must have known what the outcome would be, the devastation, but you did it anyway. Killing Jennifer demonstrates a capacity for cruelty that is mind-boggling, or that you are incapable of human feeling, that you are unable to conceive of these children as anything other than things to be acquired. Your greed is engulfing, and therefore you deserve a sentence at the upper limit of the range. You claim you didn't know Jennifer, but you coveted her life, and you effectively took it for your own. First, you took Jennifer's husband. Whatever the state of their relationship, they were married. Then you took Jennifer's home, moving yourself Miami into Fort Jefferson, into Jennifer's bed. You moved Nicole into one of the kids' bedrooms. You enrolled Nicole at the school where Jennifer had five children, friends, a community. You tried to take Jennifer's children by erasing Jennifer. You hoped to get custody, becoming what you and Fotis prematurely claimed to be, a married couple with six children. You cold-bloodedly planned, executed, and covered up Jennifer's murder, and therefore you deserve to be sentenced at the upper limit of the range. This killing was not an accident. You did not lose control. You helped plan every complex step, minute by minute. You drifted around that house, fiddling with Fotis's phone, providing him with an alibi, all the while knowing he was in New Canaan, snuffing out Jennifer's life. You were intimate with him against the door of the Tacoma, bloody seats and all. You sat in the Raptor chewing gum and texting while he disposed of bags of bloody evidence. That is the definition of cold-blooded. Your Honor, I believe any and all sentences should be served consecutively. There are no mitigating factors. This woman is sophisticated. She is educated. She's an independent person. She was not swayed by FOTUS. I knew him 4 years, much longer than she did. And he was no Svengali. He had no special powers. She has shown no remorse. She's had many opportunities over the past 5 years to help or show compassion, and she never has. Finally, to the degree time in prison provides retribution for these crimes, she deserves to be sentenced at the upper limit of the range. Traconis's daughter, Nicole, was 12 when Traconis conspired to kill Jennifer. In the past 5 years, Traconis has raised her daughter into young adulthood. In Connecticut, Miami, and Colorado, Traconis has been available to her mother, spent time with her sister and her friends. Jennifer will not raise her children past May 24th, 2019. Jennifer will never take care of her mother or sister. Jennifer will never spend time with us, her friends. Jennifer's sentence is forever.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Good morning.
That was
this is my friend Jenny.
That was an amazing. Let me just hang on a second.
Okay.
Get it off the air. That was an amazing impact statement. That was probably the best one I've ever heard of. Right. Someone in the chat, Paper Chaser, I didn't want to interrupt that outstanding impact statement made for her friend, Jennifer Doulos. You know, she used her maiden name, Farber, Jennifer Farber Doulos. And she kept looking, of course, at Michelle Traconis. The whole time she gave her impact statement. And of course, I'm sure the attorney for Michelle Traconis told her not to look at her. But she delivered that impact statement. It was very well written, very well spoken. And I can't see how a impact statement that was that strong didn't somehow sway the judge to give the maximum sentence. And I'm gonna build to this. The other thing is, and the judge didn't give a maximum sentence. He gave 14 and a half years, which is at the more lenient level, because I want to speak about acting in concert. And basically acting in concert, if you're involved in a murder and you were the getaway driver and the person you're driving to that scene shoots and kills somebody, it's as if you pulled the trigger.
Exactly.
And the same thing in this case, she facilitated this crime of murder. And even though she may not have had anything to do with the murder, the top charge she was convicted was conspiracy to commit murder. However, in New York, and again, that's our frame of reference because we're from New York. If you went along on this murder, and I don't know if they could have proved that she would have been charged with the murder also. But she was charged, the top count here was conspiracy to commit murder. And that sentence was 14 and a half years. And it seems like from what I understood, and the judge went through the charges very quickly, that it was 20 years, but you had to do 14 and a half.
That's right.
So that's really the only thing that to me is in concrete, that she has to do 14 and a half years. Am I wrong with that, Mike?
No, she has to do 14 and a half years before she's eligible for some sort of release, like a parole, that sort of thing. He was also very lenient in the fact that none of the charges, none of the crimes for which she's convicted, the sentence will be served consecutively, one after the other, like she would do 14 and a half years out of 20 years for the conspiracy, 5 years after that for, tampering with physical evidence and things like that. By sentencing her concurrently, they will all be served together. So it's really, she's serving one sentence, and that's the sentence for conspiracy. Everything else will be just served concurrently. That's very, very generous to her. And I will say this, Maybe she didn't physically kill Jennifer Doulos, but she may have been, you know, the motive that her relationship with Doulos, she may have actually been the reason why Jennifer Doulos was killed. She may, the husband wanted to finally get the wife out of the way. He didn't want to pay alimony. He didn't want to pay child support. They've had five children. He was going to be paying through his nose until the youngest child reaches the age of 21. And so by killing her, he eliminated all that. And then he has his girlfriend. He keeps his homes. He keeps his children. He keeps all that money. So I'm very shocked by the sentence, because by actually working hand in hand with the killer, she helped, the lady who read the impact statement said, get away for months upon months upon months. The body has never been recovered. She's never offered to the police to...
Ready to pop the question and take advantage of 30% off? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds. And they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com to get 30% off select lab-grown diamonds. That's BlueNile.com for 30% off lab-grown diamonds. BlueNile.com.
This episode brought to you by Progressive. Whether you're driving, cooking, or doing laundry, Progressive knows the podcasts you listen to go best when they're bundled with another activity. Much like how their Progressive home and auto policies go best when they're bundled. Having these two policies together makes taking care of your insurance easier and could help you save, too. Customers who save by switching their home and car insurance to Progressive save over $775 on average. That's a whole lot of savings and protection for your favorite podcast listening activities, like going on a road trip, cooking dinner, and even hitting the home gym. Yep, your home and your car are even easier to protect when you bundle your insurance together. Find your perfect combo. Get a home and car insurance quote at Progressive.com today. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $779 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Not available in all states.
Tell them where the body is. Nothing like that whatsoever. So that is very, very, it's a very light sentence, I think, for what she did.
Well, Mike, the whole concept also of... conspiracy to commit murder. And I would imagine that in the conspiracy to commit murder, the charge of criminal facilitation is within that charge, because our actions helped facilitate the murder and also helped to conceal the murder.
Right. In a material way, they did. They helped greatly.
And some have suggested, and I disagree with this, but some have suggested, not it just in the chat, but in the press, that perhaps Michelle Tricconis is going to get a very harsh sentence because Fotos Doulos is not around to punish.
Right.
His punishment was suicide, his own taking of his own life. But I don't agree with that. I think that, again, getting back to the concept of acting in concert, in New York, she would have been charged with murder, not conspiracy to commit murder. She would have been charged with murder, which carries a sentence of 25 to life. So right. I'm agreeing with most of the people, it seems, that the 20 years she was sentenced to for the conspiracy to commit murder and only having to do 14 and a half of that, it seems rather lenient when in certain states there could have been a murder charge for this crime. And instead in Connecticut, it was conspiracy to commit murder.
Yeah, the judge could have made, if he'd done several of the charges, crimes to be served consecutively, that could have been 14 and a half years for the conspiracy, and then another 5 years for tampering with physical evidence. So she could have ended up with easily 30 years behind bars, incarcerated. But he gave a tremendous break. I'm not a fan of having people serve sentences concurrently, because you take the top charge, and that person gets that sentence. They do that time behind bars. But on the other hand, all of the other lesser crimes, for which are very serious, tampering with physical evidence, things like that, they actually pretty much go by the wayside. And so really, you're coming down to just, she's serving a sentence for really only one crime. And that's the
concurrence. Yeah, you know, I never really understood the whole concept of concurrent sentencing. It's like a freebie, you know.
Right, exactly.
You did all these crimes, but yet we're just going to charge you for the most serious ones. And we're going to call the sentencing for the other ones concurrent. It makes no sense at all. But basically, you're getting off scot-free for the other crimes because we're going to just sentence you for the highest crime. It doesn't make any sense to me at all.
That's right. Tampering with physical evidence, manipulating the phone, Doulos's phone, making it look like he was in one place when he actually was in another, perhaps actually killing and burying the body. Those are very serious crimes. That's not just like, well, maybe you told one lie to one cop at one point, maybe to cover up what your boyfriend did. No, she was a material part to help facilitate this crime, help cover it up, you know. So therefore, what she did, she was, in essence, she worked hand in hand with her boyfriend. She didn't come in at the last minute and throw one piece of garbage in Hartford. No, she did a lot more than that. And for that, she deserves a greater sentence than that.
You know, Mike, it seemed like she just wanted to really move in to the life of Jennifer mm-hmm. Doulos. Just take over her life, her children, her house, or everything. And, you know, for that itself also is like, it's not a crime, but it's sort of
it's strange.
Yeah, it's strange. It's maybe a moral, being morally bankrupt to just do that. I would say, that part of, morally bankrupt. But that's, again, we're dealing with crimes here. We're dealing with felonies. Right. So poor morals isn't going to come into play. I want to play a little bit of Gloria Farber. This is the mother giving her impact statement. The mother of Jennifer Farber Doulos, of course, the victim in this case.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Thank you, Judge Randall, for giving me the opportunity to speak about my daughter, Jennifer Rebecca Doulos. When Jennifer did not answer calls, texts, did not go to a scheduled doctor's appointment on May 24th, 2019, the day Jennifer disappeared, I knew something terrible had happened. When I learned about how she died, my thoughts turned to my wonderful daughter, Jennifer, who only wanted to give and to get love and to be a loving mother. She lived in fear for her life, in fear that her husband might abduct her children. I thought of how to help my grandchildren when they learned how their mother died. How could I help them and myself cope with the unthinkable? My strength came from needing to cope. My purpose was clear: to be there for my grandchildren and for my daughter, Melissa. My daughter and Jennifer's loyal friends thought it was important to honor Jennifer. We organized a ceremony at Temple Emmanuel in November of 2019, inviting people near and dear to her, family and friends. Knowing songs that Jennifer loved, we asked a pianist and a woman singer to sing her favorite songs. The chief rabbi spoke, as well as several other people. Then we had a reception at the Harmony Club, where we had brunch, and more music, and I recited the words of a song that inspired my husband and I to find the right name for Jenny, Jennifer. It starts, Jenny Rebecca, 4 days old. How do you like the world so far? It is a song that was written by Carol Hall. She sent me the lyrics with a note saying, for your Jenny Rebecca. Due to Jennifer's character, she had the ability to connect with a select group of friends to whom she confided and empathized with if they had any issues. These are the friends who have remained with the children, sharing, taking care of their health, education, and encouraging their athletic interests. They're available to hug and love them, and when needed, disciplining them as their mother would have wanted. They have planned vacations, celebrated their birthdays and name days, providing, when they are couples, male role models who interact with the children as if they were their own sons and daughters. In this way, creating blended families by including their children. One being widowed and having met Jennifer in graduate school is able to mentor the children on any subject. Run with one of the boys who loves running. She has become our family spokesperson. Jennifer's sister, their aunt, loves them deeply and provides a connection to their mother. We honor Jennifer by creating a memorial stone near her father's gravesite. The stone is a replica of her father's gravestone. Jennifer had always wanted to be buried near her father. Now we had a memorial stone where the family and close friends gathered. I asked a rabbi from the temple about my family to preside. She recited Kaddish and asked if anyone wanted to talk about Jennifer. Her sister spoke eloquently, as well as many of the other participants. For years, we searched for her remains, tracking down every lead. This search continues. Every year, we honor Jennifer on her birthday, September 27th, 1968. On that day in September, her children, her sister, her friends, and I crossed the street from my apartment and we walked to Central Park carrying purple balloons, Jennifer's favorite color. We sit on benches and using markers, we write messages to her. Then we let the balloons go and watch as the wind lets them float to the sky. We watch them until the balloons disappear. Jennifer filled her children with love, wisdom, and humor. Jennifer would have been very proud of her children's accomplishments. They will always have their memories of her, as do I. Thank you.
Wow. You know, it's so hard, I would imagine. First of all, for a loved one to give an impact statement is just so difficult. And for the judge to hear this, I don't know how he could not be affected by this in his sentencing. And having said that, Nancy H., burying a child is awful. Let me just put you on the screen. Nancy H. Burying a child is awful, but knowing that child was killed horrifically and not having her remains is something I can't fathom. Very strong mother. Absolutely. I would imagine, you know, a murder where you can't recover the body for the family, that's got to be horrific. And to not know exactly, we know Jennifer had a horrific death, but we never found the body. So when you talk about closure, and every ethnicity, every religion known to man wants the body so that they can believe that their loved one is actually dead, you know. And it was clear, I guess, legally, the legal profession declared her dead without finding her body based on all the facts and circumstances, which we would call circumstantial evidence. Mm-hmm. And she would be declared dead. But it's not, it is horrible for the family to live with that, that the body has never been recovered. And where was it thrown? This dirtbag Fotis Doulos, who again was stalking his own wife, was torturing her, was threatening the kids. Where did he dump this body, you know? And those are the thoughts that when you go to sleep at night must enter your brain, and you must think of the kids, thinking of their mother, whatever happened to mom, you know? And, you know, having said that, I want to say, folks in the chat, if you think this sentence of 20 years, which will be satisfied with 14 and a half years of incarceration, that's what we learned from the judge. If you think it was too lenient, put a one in the chat. And if you think that the sentence issued by the judge, Judge Randall, should have been much harsher, put a two in the chat. When you look at the perpetrator in this case, the one who's being sentenced, Michelle Tricconis, for a murder that you could say she didn't commit the murder, but we explained the whole concept of acting in concert. And to me, she did commit the murder because she acted in concert. Yet in Connecticut, she's just being charged with conspiracy to commit murder and not the murder itself. And again, in some states, and we always refer to New York, you probably get sick of us doing that, but that's our frame of reference. She would have been charged with murder for acting in concert. You know, I'm looking at the chat, and it's let me just go back. Many of you think the sentence was lenient, a lot of ones, and you know, it's sort of I almost asked the same question: how many think it should have been much harsher? And it's almost the same question, and it's almost split down the middle. But having said that, also, I was very, very impressed with this Judge Randall. He's a learned man. He knows the law. He really thought about what he was doing. He really, in fact, after all the impact statements, he said, I want to take some time and think this over, and I'll come back out with my decision. And I believe he said Michelle Tricconis had over 60-something letters from friends of hers and family saying what a wonderful human being she was. So the judge, you know, the scale of justice, that's the emblem for the
right,
for being a lawyer, right, is the scales of justice.
Mm-hmm.
And the scales of justice is what this Judge Randall has to think of. What is fair? And he talked about sentencing. And what does he have to consider? And should he be swayed by sympathy? And should he be, or should he just apply the law? And I believe he listened to both sides, but I think in the end, he just applied the law.
Yeah, Billy, there's no doubt in my mind that before today's proceedings even began, he knew from the very beginning when he banged the gavel and convened court in the morning, at what sentence he was going to give. I don't think he was swayed to be more lenient or harsher than maybe he was planning on being. I think he pretty much knew what he was going to say, and it was probably a 99% chance that what he was thinking he was going to sentence her to, in the end, that would be it. Although, as you said, he did take a break. He did think about it. He went back over it one more time, and that's good. But this is a very difficult part to be, the role you have as a judge, because you are learned. You're supposed to be fair, and you're not supposed to be swayed by passion or prejudice. You're supposed to do what the law demands. And law demands, I think, in this case, because I think, as you say, there was no evidence that she actually killed, Jennifer, or that sort of thing. But what she did was, to me, and I think probably to you and Phil, is just as important. But in Connecticut, they didn't charge, like you say, murder. They charged the conspiracy because she facilitated after the fact. But I like to think of it as she was probably maybe the main motivation for the murder to take place in the first place. Doulos's desire to be with her and not have to pay his wife alimony and child support and, you know, that sort of thing for many, many years. But the impact statements I thought were beautiful. I thought they were well written, well delivered.
You know, Mike, there's one more I want to play because the Doulos's nanny lived with them for years.
Okay.
And she was practically a member of the family.
Right.
And I want to play her impact statement because I think she spent as much time with the kids as Jennifer did. She was, you know, this was a busy couple. They were usually successful, at least, you know, Jennifer was. The husband was he seemed like his businesses were falling apart and he was continuously borrowing money from her parents. In fact, I think he took a big loan that he was about to default on. And so there was a lot of other background stuff to this murder. Let me play the nanny for the Doulos's.
Your Honor, thank you for letting me speak today. This is a photo of Jennifer on her 50th birthday. We all celebrated together. It's also her last birthday that we all celebrated together. I first met Jennifer in 2012 when she had five small kids and I was 21 in my senior year of college. I started babysitting for Jennifer once a week, but then that grew to seeing Jennifer and her kids almost 6 days a week. From the beginning, I was never just their nanny. To be inside someone's home is such an intimate experience, one that has many ups and many downs. But right away, Jennifer opened up her home to me and made me part of their family. We were a duo right away. She trusted me and I trusted her. It was Jennifer I went to when anything happened in my life, when I needed direction or someone to just vent to. Jennifer always had my best interests at heart and gave me a space to be heard. She made me laugh. She made me think about my future. And she provided me with opportunities I never thought I'd have. Most importantly, she loved me and I loved her and her family. Through this experience, I've gained people in my life that were Jennifer's closest friends and are now my chosen family. Women who are teaching me how to be a mother, how to let things go, how to just live and love. They have all taken some place of what Jennifer was to me, even though that hole can never be filled. There's a piece of Jennifer in all of them. I hear Jennifer's voice in Kiki's, her intelligence in Carrie, her force with Laurel, and her wittiness in Caroline. Seeing Melissa and Gloria, I see Jennifer in their eyes and smiles. While I've gained this chosen family, it shouldn't be like this. It should be Jennifer sitting at the table helping with homework. It should be Jennifer attending sports events. It should be Jennifer taking them on college tours. It should be Jennifer's bed they run into at night. It should be Jennifer giving them advice on friendships. It should be Jennifer that they have to console them, It should be Jennifer, to see them at their sad times and at their happiest. And you, Michelle, you have helped take away all of this. You took their mother and you took my friend. The actions of Michelle Trinconis have greatly affected my life and continue to affect my life. The day Jennifer went missing was the day I started to fear not only for my life, but the life of Jennifer's five children. And this was directly because of what Michelle and Fotis decided to do on May 24th, 2019. I no longer slept. I no longer could leave the apartment without running to my car in fear that someone would come after me. I could no longer enter my home in Connecticut without a police officer because I was afraid of Michelle and Fotis being on the other side waiting for me. We didn't leave the kids alone because we were certain Michelle and Fotis would try and take them. We had armed bodyguards escort us anywhere we went because we lived in fear 24/7. I had nightmares so bad, I woke up in tears shaking, unable to let go of the thought of Michelle and Fotis taking these kids and doing something unthinkable, because the unthinkable had already happened. It has been proven that Michelle conspired with Fotis to kill, in the most gruesome way, a mother of five kids, a mother and my friend. May 24, 2019 was the day Jennifer was murdered by Fotis and Michelle. And that was the day I decided I wouldn't leave those kids until she was found. It's been 5 years and I still haven't left their side. I had a relationship, upcoming career, family, friends, my whole life was in Connecticut. I left all that to help Gloria and Jennifer's close friends to care for these kids. My relationship ended. I lost the place I called home. I've lost friends and time with my family. I had to rethink what my life would be like now that I had five kids to help look after. These kids have become my whole world. And they've taught me what unconditional love is. But because of what Michelle has done, my life has become something unexpected. I put my own goals in life on hold. My desire to have my own children has been paused. I've also witnessed what losing both parents have done to these kids. Tears, fear, sadness, because they no longer have parents to watch them grow up.
Ready to pop the question and take advantage of 30% off? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds. And they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com to get 30% off select lab-grown diamonds. That's BlueNile.com for 30% off lab-grown diamonds. BlueNile.com.
This episode brought to you by Progressive. Whether you're driving, cooking, or doing laundry, Progressive knows the podcasts you listen to go best when they're bundled with another activity. Much like how their Progressive home and auto policies go best when they're bundled. Having these two policies together makes taking care of your insurance easier and could help you save, too. Customers who save by switching their home and car insurance to Progressive save over $775 on average. That's a whole lot of savings and protection for your favorite podcast listening activities, like going on a road trip, cooking dinner, and even hitting the home gym. Yep, your home and your car are even easier to protect when you bundle your insurance together. Find your perfect combo. Get a home and car insurance quote at Progressive.com today. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $779 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Not available in all states.
Graduate. Help them learn from mistakes. Enter relationships. And share memories of their childhood. The feeling we all feel, knowing we have our parents in this world that love us unconditionally, no matter what we do, the five of them lost that. And while the kids are surrounded by unconditional love, this feeling of safety and security for them is gone. You, Michelle, were found guilty on all accounts in this courtroom. You, Michelle, drove with Fotis while you threw away Jennifer's bloody clothes in the trash. You, Michelle, lied multiple times to the police. You, Michelle, have been disrespectful in this courtroom. You, Michelle, have been found guilty of conspiring with Fotis to murder Jennifer. You, Michelle, show no remorse and no accountability. Michelle Trinconis deserves to spend the maximum sentence behind bars because of all that she did. She helped change the course of so many people's lives. And for what? To take Jennifer's place? Because you could never. To live this lavish lifestyle FOTUS promised? We'll never know, because I believe Michelle will never be honest. She took away the most genuine, thoughtful, funny, and kind person I have ever met. She took away a mother who sang silly songs to her kids, who was always there when they fell to lift them back up. A mother whose whole life was Petros, Theodore, Christian, Constantine, and Noel. Now these kids and all of Jennifer's loved ones no longer have that. We don't even have the comfort of knowing where she is. Where is she, Michelle? Michelle helped take Jennifer's life at the young age of 50. And she deserves to live out the maximum sentence behind bars. Thank you, Yvonne.
Thank you.
Again, another very powerful impact statement.
Right.
And what the commonality of a lot of these impact statements is, they're pointing the finger at Michelle Trinconis, that not only were you with Fotis Doulos, her husband, but you assisted in the murder of Jennifer Doulos. And that's clear that each and every one of them say this and basically point a finger at her. And, you know, someone in the chat was asking, oh, why are impact statements allowed? Well, why shouldn't they be allowed? Because people are victims. And the criminal justice system is part of our system that works for the people and by the people, you know. And the judge and the jury and the people that work in the court, the clerks, the stenographers, they're all instruments of the people that are in that business to see that justice is meted out. And in this case, the conviction, I think, was the right thing, of course. And perhaps the penalty is not what everyone wanted in this case. Mike.
Billy, I think victim impact statements are tremendously important. The victim in this crime, she had five children. She had a family. She had friends. She had many loved ones. She had a best friend who spoke very eloquently. So the trial is primarily for the benefit of the defendant, because the burden is on the state to prove each and every element of the crime beyond a reasonable doubt. And we have an identifiable victim. However, people don't understand is that there's not just one victim here. There's the victim, there's her children, there's her loved one, there's her mother, there's her best friend, there's people that she touched. They're all victims in a way, because they may not be the primary victim and the one that the trial was for, but they are absolutely impacted. I cannot see that her best friend isn't any less impacted than her mother, her family. Everyone there, I thought was eloquent, and I thought it was tremendous. I think it's very proper. I know some people think it's a waste of time. I don't think so. I think this is part of our criminal justice system, to recognize the fact that there are many people besides the person who is the actual victim of the crime itself, that the victimization goes to the community. If there's a burglary on your street, you will be victimized because you will live in fear about your home being burglarized. If a member of your family close to you is violently assaulted, you will feel less secure. So absolutely, there are many other people who are victimized. And I think that this is really a proper thing to do. And I thought it was really well done in this case.
100%. I just saw Maui Swift. Michelle should have turned on Fotis. It's unfortunate he got out on bond, allowing him not to face justice and escape his children's questions. Mm-hmm. Yeah, Maui, you know something? He's what we would all consider to be a weak man, because A, he couldn't find a way out of this without violence and killing his wife and stalking his wife, and, you know, and then when the heat became too much for him to handle, what did he do? He killed himself. He took his life, right? So a weak, disgusting man. And, you know, Michelle Tricconis, people, you know, and it sort of gets a little annoying to me when people say, oh, she's just taking the heat because Fotos Doulos can't be punished. I don't agree with that. You know, and we explain the whole concept of acting in concert, and in several numerous states, in New York being one of them, she could have been charged with the murder herself for her role in it. You know, so when you want to say that, you know, she's just being punished more, and she wasn't punished very harshly.
Not at all.
A 20-year sentence, which amounts to 14.5 with other concurrent, which we say the whole concept of concurrent sentencing to me is beyond the pale. I just think it's a concept that is sort of a joke. What's the point of a concurrent sentence? It's, oh, as I'm in prison serving 15 years, I'm thinking about the five that I'm serving at the same time for robbery. You know, oh, yes, I'm thinking about it. It makes no sense whatsoever. And I don't know why they listed. I want to play one more impact statement. This is Jennifer Farber Doulos' eldest son. And let's hear what he has to say here.
Eldest son. The defendant's actions in conspiring to murder my mother have had irreparable effects on my life, many that I'm still figuring out each and every day. I've been left with a hole inside of me that I know I will never be able to fill. Losing my mother tore me from the joyful innocence of my youth and made me confront the horrors of the world at an early age.
Sorry, the interpreter will have to ask the gentleman to speak a little slow.
My mother was everything to me. But during the divorce, I became very bitter with everyone around me, especially Mom, because she was always trying to help me. This meant that I hurt the person closest to me because I didn't know how else to voice my pain. The defendant's actions mean that I will never be able to tell my mom how sorry I am for not being a better son when she needed me. I will never be able to tell Mom how proud of her courage I am, most importantly, how much I love her. This fact haunts me every day. There are feelings and thoughts that I will never be able to express again because my mom was the key to those parts of me. I'm upset that I will never know the man I could have become if my mom was still here to guide me. She was my hero, and now I often feel lost without her comforting smile and her meaningful discussions. I wish I could share my victories with her, but I can't because she is not here anymore. I wish I knew she was in the stands watching me play. I wish I could come home and show her my grades and feel the genuine pride in me that I only got from her. I wish you could sit for hours and discuss everything there is to talk about. I wish you could see me mature from a boy into a young man. I wish I could hug Mom again, but I can't now. Your Honor, I understand that sitting over there is a mother with a child and a family who love her. My mom once had that. We once had that, and she helped destroy it. That woman appeals to our sympathy under the guise of being a mother. She has desecrated the meaning of that word for me. This statement is primarily about my loss, but I also want to highlight my mom's exceptional nature. The number of people who have rallied around us is a testament to the devotion she inspired in those close to her. I want to end with the lesson my mom taught me. Leave everything the same or better than you found it. Michelle Tricconis, you did the opposite. You should be punished. Thank you.
Wow, you know, this is that was the only time that I saw Michelle Tricconis looking at the person that was delivering the impact statement. You know, just pretty amazing, right? I mean, because she knew those kids intimately. She knew all the kids. Mm-hmm. And she, I guess, at some point almost thought she was taking place of their mother, or wished to take place of their mother. And all these impact statements were, in my opinion, very powerful. Yet, the sentence didn't reflect that. And when we watch the judge, he's a very learned man. He's very articulate. He's very smart. He knows the law up and down. And I wonder what, and, you know, he mentioned, he talked about sentencing and justice and all of that stuff. What was it that, in the opinion of many people here, steered him towards giving what we all consider, what, now I'm not going to say all, I can't speak for all, what many of us consider was a very lenient sentence?
Bill, you know, you're saying this, I'm thinking about what the judge said, and I'm just listening to what, Jennifer Doulos's, son said. He was pretty eloquent for a young man under a lot of pressure. But I think perhaps in some ways, maybe the judge had a little bit of sympathy for Michelle Tricconis because she is in fact a mother and her child will be without a mother for 14 and a half years. And so maybe on some levels, he tried to give her a stiff punishment, but on the other hand, show a little bit of compassion for Michelle's own children and the impact that her incarceration would have on them. So there's no winners here. There's, you know, everyone loses. And I think maybe the judge, you know, that's a very difficult role to play. You have to be fair, unemotional. Again, without, you decide questions of law, sentences, without passion or prejudice. And I think that although I would have liked to have seen a much harsher sentence, I think that's the reason why he was a little compassionate towards Michelle Tricconis, because she herself is a mom and this is going to impact her family, her child. So I think that's what happened there.
You know, Mike, I don't downplay in any sense of the duties and responsibility of a judge. Very, very difficult job. Mm-hmm. Not just controlling the courtroom, but controlling fairness and dispensing the law in a way that you're honoring the system and at the same time being fair and human. But and I think you're right. I think somehow he was touched by the fact that Michelle Tricconis is a mother and the fact that she had a lot of people in the courtroom that love her and a daughter that's going to be without her now for 14 and a half years. But when the attorney for Michelle Tricconis tried to get him to issue her bond, and he said, no, that's being rejected. That's not a right. No one has the right to get bond while waiting for appeal. I mean, he showed in that sense that he was being tough. But in the same vein, I agree. I thought the sentence was on the lenient side.
Sure.
You know, and you know, I don't want to beat a dead horse, but you get back to acting in concert in many places, many states. She could have been charged with murder, and she was convicted. The highest charge was conspiracy to commit murder. And to me, all those other charges are meaningless because they're all concurrent. So the sentence for conspiracy to commit murder was 20 years, yet the judge said she'll have to serve 14 and a half. So the criminal justice system speaks like that a lot. You're getting 20, but you only have to do, you know, it's like it sort of contradicts itself, you know?
Yeah, I think what hurts a lot of the public when they see things like this is that there's no definitiveness to it. It's not a definite number. You have to do 25 years, you have to do 20 years. I think that probably would give people a lot more confidence in our criminal justice system to say, if you're sentenced to 20 years, you do the full 20. Or maybe, you know, you get a year off for good behavior. But other than that, when you talk about a 20-year sentence, oh, but now it's only 14 and a half. Wow, that's 25% off. You know, that's a tremendous amount of time off. So I wouldn't want to be in her shoes doing 14 and a half years behind prison. But considering the circumstances, that was a generous, generously fair, generous portion of fairness dolloped out to her. And there's no way she can complain about it. But yeah, that is very frustrating to people who are not involved in the criminal justice system. The numbers game, it just seems like it's not definite. It doesn't give us a sense of what justice is.
But yet the humanity of the folks that we played, that the best friend of Jennifer Dulos, her nanny, her oldest son, their humanity poured through their impact statements, and their pain poured through their impact statements. And yet this judge, who I love this judge too. I thought he was fantastic.
Yeah.
The only thing was at the end, and I'm not a judge, so that's his job. He meted out a sentence that he thought was just and that he thought covered these charges. And many of us will disagree, but we're not sitting above the courtroom in those black robes, and we're not, I'm not as learned as him in the law, and most of us aren't. And he believes he applied the law and fairness properly. And I don't want to beat this again, or beat a dead horse here, but many of us disagree. That's all I would like to say. Anyway, Mike, I'm going to, folks, just so you know, we came on as the sentencing was live, or the judge was coming back, and we hustled to get on the air. And I apologize if it seemed a little rushed, but Mike was he was playing Parcheesi or something or chess. And I said, I'm sending you a link. Come on the air. And I jumped on, and, it sort of was a little rushed. We weren't at all prepared. But I want to thank everyone that came by today to support us, Police Off the Cuff, Real Crime Stories. Any of you folks that aren't subscribed, I see most of you in the chat. I know most of you, so I think most of you are subscribed. But if you're not subscribed, go on our YouTube, hit that subscribe button, give us a thumbs up, ring that bell, hit the like button. And, we're working hard at this. And again, we appreciate all our mods, the Pranzos, Pete and Richella, and of course, Kim Alliston, who's unbelievable, who's coming back to, she's coming back, getting healthier all the time. She's had a battle with some stuff, and I'm proud that she's a fighter and gives it all. And if any of you guys know Kim Alliston from watching our podcast, she's a great lady, and she's so supportive of us. Maui Swift, I'm always glad to see Maui Swift. She's been a longtime supporter of Police Off the Cuff. Melissa Stiller, all you guys in the chat, so great to see you all here. Brandon Houseman, I think you're semi-new. She has to do 85% of her time. It seems like she's doing less, going to have to do less than that, though, right? 14 and a half is not 85% of 20, right? 85% of 20 would be what?
Right.
You can see, well, all of us are not mathematicians. That's why we became cops,
Oh, yeah.
But Magical Mary, good to see you. Trish Norman, Cheated No More. Emily, 53. I'm saying hi to all the people in the chat before we say goodbye. Emily Parkinson, laws need to be changed in the justice system, and the laws should be the same nationwide. Well, that's never the case. It'll never be that way. States basically can make, they have their own state legislatures, and they make the law according to a lot of different things that we don't have time to go into today. But I agree with that whole acting in concert thing, and which is a great, great tool, I think, and a great law. But I totally disagree with the concurrent sentencing. I think it's just crazy. Becky Pulford, Jennifer seems to be an amazing mom. Her children are a credit to her. They are so much better, and so was Jennifer, than Michelle could ever be. She's not fit to lace their boots. You're 100% right. You're 100% right. And I think that was spelled out pretty well. Rosie Librario, thank you both for this video. Well, thank everyone for coming by. Mike, your final words, and then we're going to say sayonara.
Okay. I think we should all say a prayer for Jennifer Dulos' family and for those children, and for her mom and her best friend, and who had her life taken away from them. We may not agree with the judge, but you know what? He has a hard job to do. And so we have to respect that. We have to respect his decisions because that's the way we do things in our criminal justice system. I just want to thank everybody for coming in at the last moment.
Yeah. We were pretty fast. We found our seats pretty fast. And then tell you the truth, when I first sat down, my microphone wasn't working. I was like, oh, no.
Oh, yeah.
Because usually then I need like 20 engineering minutes to figure it out. Somehow I figured it out and I was like, I was ready to call Mike and say, forget it. My mic's not working, you know, but then I stuck to it and here we are. So, folks, well, Police Off the Cuff, Real Crime Stories. Thanks for tuning in today. Have a great night, a wonderful weekend, and God bless everyone. One episode, just ain't enough.